Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. On Monday, the bipartisan House committee investigating the January 6th insurrection held its final public meeting and released the executive summary of its extensive final report. It's more than 100 pages long. Not the report, y'all. The executive summary. For more than a year, the committee has held 9 public hearings and presented testimony from dozens of witnesses. The executive summary explains why the committee was so painstaking in their process. Writing, quote, "We understood that millions of Americans still lack the information necessary to understand and evaluate what President Trump has told them about the election." Here's Committee Chairman Benny Thompson.
To cast a vote in the United States is an act of faith and hope. If the faith is broken, so is our democracy. Donald Trump broke that faith. He lost the 2020 election and knew it. But he chose to try to stay in office through a multi-part scheme to overturn the results and block the transfer of power.
The key takeaway of the committee was clear. The events of January 6th were not spontaneous, unplanned, or uncoordinated. They were a direct result of the choices, actions, and inactions of the former president. Outgoing Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney had this to say.
Among the most shameful of this committee's findings was that President Trump sat in the dining room off the Oval Office watching the violent riot at the Capitol on television. For hours, he would not issue a public statement instructing his supporters to disperse and leave the Capitol. For hours, he would not do it.
Then the committee made history, voting unanimously to refer former President Trump to the Department of Justice on 4 criminal charges.
The president has an affirmative and primary constitutional duty to act to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Nothing could be a greater betrayal of this duty than to assist in insurrection against the constitutional order. We have gone where the facts and the law lead us. Accordingly, Mr. Chairman, in light of these facts, I ask unanimous consent that the chairman be directed to transmit to the United States Department of Justice relevant select committee records in furtherance of these criminal referrals.
Joining us now is Hunter Walker, investigative reporter with Talking Points Memo and co-author of The Breach, the untold story of the investigation into January 6th. Hunter, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Melissa.
Help us to just understand the meaning of the words here. What does it mean to refer someone for prosecution?
So Congress does not have criminal authority. So what they've essentially done here is, you know, recommend to the Justice Department. I've been saying to people, it's almost like, you know, an amicus brief to the Supreme Court. And in this case, you know, they recommended it specifically to Jack Smith. This is the special counsel that Merrick Garland has recently appointed to take over, you know, Trump-related aspects of the investigation into January 6th.
And how do we assess the, you know, I hate sort of the crystal balling effect and, you know, what will happen next, but are there terms given the history of this to actually assess the likelihood that charges will come?
You know, this is a pretty rare situation. And, you know, referrals like this have not always resulted in charges. However, you know, as I was saying, there's already a special counsel and they are already focused on Trump. So, you know, it's very funny because I was a White House correspondent throughout the Trump years. And I think, you know, as you or any of your listeners will know, there was a tendency among some, you know, in the discourse to kind of make every discussion about Trump prematurely legal. You know, there were a lot of people who, you know, indicted him on Twitter themselves, you know, about 7,000 times during the course of his administration. And it was often premature because there's a lot of bias, particularly in the Justice Department, you know, against, you know, filing charges against a president. They tend to, you know, take an Office of Legal Counsel opinion on this matter, which is also not, you know, ironclad, but they have taken it as gospel. All of that being said, this time something is different. And, you know, we're already well into an investigation into January 6th. It's been the largest in the history of the FBI, and it's resulted in over 900 charges against individuals who broke into the building. So far, that investigation has focused on just that, the people who stormed into the Capitol that day. And I've always been told from my sources in the Justice Department that they're sort of taking a traditional criminal investigation approach, which means a hierarchical investigation that kind of works its way up the pyramid from the wide base of people at the bottom to, you know, the very high level organizers. What we're seeing with the appointment of the special counsel is, you know, they are now focusing on that higher level. And, you know, Merrick Garland has been explicit that higher level does involve the president and his political allies. You know, the question is how much effect this report will have on it. You know, I'd say it's more of a recommendation, but in terms of, you know, the principle and the public discourse, it's obviously a huge thing. Congress is saying, you know, we think that this should be criminal. And they're also previewing a lot of the evidence that we know that the Justice Department and the special counsel may have. We know that the Justice Department has taken some of the evidence that was acquired by this committee, and the committee is now showing us a way that that might be used to make charges.
All right, y'all, we have to take a break. More of this conversation in just a moment.
While some colleges ramped up police presence on campus, others responded to protests against Israel's war in Gaza by giving students a seat at the table. I'm Kai Wright, and on the next Notes from America, meet a young negotiator from Brown University. We'll explore what divestment actually means and how views of victory in this movement vary depending on where you sit. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Takeaway, and we're still with Hunter Walker, investigative reporter with Talking Points Memo. The fact that you mentioned those 900 some odd people who've been investigated, folks who have been, and I'm not talking here about the high level, we'll get to that, but, you know, on the bottom, folks who were streaming into the Capitol that day. And while I don't necessarily have, you know, the softest place in my heart for them, they're also like ordinary folks. My very first thought yesterday as this recommendation was coming down was about them and wondering sort of how they might be feeling or what they might be thinking about the notion that the president at least stands the possibility of being charged for sets of actions they've already been charged in.
Yeah, you know, my coverage of January 6th began on the day itself. And I was there on the ground, basically carried into this crowd as it charged into the building. And it was immediately apparent to me, you know, that there was high level organization and infrastructure, political, media, and otherwise behind what happened that day. We all saw so much of this with our own eyes. I was there at the speech where Trump, you know, told the crowd to quote unquote fight like hell and said they were going to walk to the Capitol. We all saw the months of Fox News, the late Rush Limbaugh, Trump, Republican members of Congress and others promote these baseless election lies that made those people angry and brought them to D.C. that day. And, you know, of course, standing there with my own eyes, the infrastructure was visible. There was a stage. There's a whole apparatus required for the president to come speak. So it was immediately apparent to me, you know, that sort of people had been called to the Capitol and there was a lot more than just the people who did so. So in a way, you know, it's been strange to kind of watch the accountability solely focus on the people who heeded that call. I mean, you know, one way I've talked about it with people is, you know, if you know liberals in your life, what if in 2016 Barack Obama had gone on TV and Rachel Maddow had gone on TV and said, oh, my God, the election is stolen. I think, you know, there's a good portion of this country who might have taken to the streets. So when you see the people who actually participated in this, you know, first off, it's important to kind of remember they were following someone's lead here. Within that group, I think, and some of them were quoted, they quoted from some of these, you know, depositions and charging documents in this executive summary. Some of them have turned on Trump. Some of them have, you know, since become quite angry. And, you know, there were some pretty impactful quotes, namely from, I think, you know, veterans. A lot of these people were actually, you know, former service members, and they were upset to kind of realize and think about the fact they'd been set on their own and sent out to brawl with police and the National Guard. But there are also people who remain true believers. I mean, last night I was listening to a streaming audio discussion, you know, involving people who had gone into the Capitol. And they're all focused on the various conspiracy theories that have been cropping up that, you know, the FBI investigation is corrupt, that this was false flag, agent provocateur, and really Antifa. So, you know, I think the ideology persists. And, you know, we're now seeing the progenitors of that ideology brought into the fore.
All right, Hunter, there were also four Republican members of Congress referred to the House Ethics Committee, including the potential next speaker, Representative Kevin McCarthy of California. What does it mean? What does it entail to have been referred to the Ethics Committee?
Well, you know, it really, really effectively won't mean very much, particularly with the Republican majority, you know, taking over next month. And also, you know, I have to say on this front, this is an area where it just does not seem to me that the committee was very aggressive. A lot of my work over the past year or so, both in The Breach, which I co-wrote with Denver Riggleman, who's a former member of Congress and staffer to the committee, and in our recent series on Talking Points Memo, where we published for the first time and delved into a lot of Mark Meadows' text messages that were provided through the committee, we've been looking at, you know, the phone records evidence that the committee compiled. And I know this was just the executive summary, but, you know, that was used very little in the report that we've seen so far. They highlighted a few texts from Meadows' phone, but it was, you know, overwhelmingly stuff that was fairly contrite and reasonable. You know, people texting Trump on or texting Meadows on January 6th and kind of saying, like, this is getting out of control. That is a very, very, very small portion of what we saw with those records. By and large, you know, we saw on Election Day 2020, as the votes were still being counted, people beginning to talk about challenging this in an organized way, using violent rhetoric, and people continuing that challenge well after even January 6th. And, you know, about 20% of those messages were from members of Congress. We counted 34 that were in there talking to Meadows about plans to overturn the election all the way up until January 17th, 3 days before Biden took office, when you had something as dramatic as Ralph Norman, a South Carolina congressman, advocating for martial law. So I think, you know, it was clear to me that, you know, there could be criminal referrals against some members of Congress along these same lines as the charges they discussed for Trump. And, you know, the number's not four. It may not go all the way up to 34 in terms of criminality, but you know, there was a lot more participation in this from the members than what we've seen this committee take on.
Hunter Walker is investigative reporter with Talking Points Memo. Hunter, I so appreciate you taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the conversation.